we go. So, wasn't my fault, it was that fault. No, I probably pushed it twice. Okay. Now you got her going. Okay, so Psalms 10, verse 7. His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and fraud. Under his tongue is mischief and vanity. Okay, so that's the main focus of the Antichrist. Fraud, and last week we went through a bunch of that. So we'll start at verse 8. He sitteth in the lurking places of the villages. In the secret places doth he murder the innocent. His eyes are privily set against the poor. He lieth in wait secretly as a lion in his den. He lieth in wait to catch the poor. He doth catch the poor when he draweth him into his net. He croucheth and humbleth himself that the poor may fall by his strong ones. Okay, so far we've read secret, the word secret, and secretly. Okay, in those two verses, you can see if this is underhanded, under the radar, as they say, secret societies, or the mysterious word that will get you hung up on when you call Rush Limbaugh and any of the other guys is a conspiracy. You know, and of course, that's when Rush says you're a wacko and all that stuff. That's just because they've been bought off by the conspiracy, or they are afraid that the conspiracy will pull the plug on them. Conspiracy is a Bible word. Okay, it is used quite regularly in the Bible. It has been used on many occasions. And this is something that is common throughout history, that it is often good men, men with some initiative, who will begin a work or a ministry, and that work or ministry will begin to expand, okay, with time, with faithfulness, and then some liberal, some lazy, good-for-nothing bum, somebody who can't, you know, lead a pack of dogs across the street to a fire hydrant. I mean, them the kind of guys will see something like that, and they will try to undercut the work. Wolves come in and take the ministry. Okay, if the liberals at Moody Bible Institute today tried to start that school many years ago, it wouldn't be what it is today. It took a D.L. Moody to get that going. Okay, and it's good, zealous, faithful men of God that got Yale and Harvard and Princeton going, and then those liberals today. You know, if the government would just pull the plug on all education subsidies, just pull it, which is what they should do, these thinking liberals, they couldn't get anybody to come listen to them nuts. Okay? It's like a liberal talk show host on radio, talk radio. You don't see them guys make it through. It's the conservatives. And granted, I don't think these guys are too conservative. Okay? I started listening to Rush Limbaugh back in 1989. I think it was his second year. And he was really top-notch back then. He has been watered down pretty bad through the years. Each year you could see it. I remember when he used to have that Mike Tyson impersonation. The following program is suitable for, you know, and it was hilarious. And had that real high-pitched voice. And when I would hear that introduction, have you ever heard him go through a caller abortion? It's been so long ago that he's done that. Have you heard him do that? He did that, and it's a beautiful analogy of an abortion, but he does it through a telephone call. How do you abort a telephone call? When does it start? When you dial, when you hear the ring, when the person picks it up. When is that big, you know, and it's just a beautiful analogy. He does have it in written form in his first book. But he don't hear him do that anymore. Okay, none whatsoever. Okay, but it's a conspiracy. Anybody with any common sense sees throughout history that when a nation gets rising with liberty principles, as that nation gets prosperous, anybody knows that somebody is going to be a parasite off it. Okay, and of course the parasites never get together and try to figure out what are we going to do when we bleed the host dry. No, they just bleed it dry. And then they're dead. Okay, and so here, and the devil, John chapter 8, verse 44, Jesus Christ said, "Ye are of your father, the devil." And then he said he's a liar and a thief. He's a liar and a thief. John 10, verse 10, the one there, Jesus said, "I've come to give you life and life more abundantly." But then there's a thief mentioned there. Okay, and that's throughout history. Okay, so the devil's main, you know, events is stealing from people, keeping them poor, okay, and then lying about things and fraud and deceit and cursing and so forth, so on. Okay, and so that's eight. He's sitting in the lurking places of the villages, in the secret places. Doth he murder the innocent? Okay, and of course then you can get involved with the abortion. There's a guy in Iowa that I met over the telephone when I was out there campaigning. And it's funny, here I'm, you know, Jan's on one thing and running the phones, and I'm running another, running the phones. And when you get talking to elderly ladies, you know, it's going to be a while, but it was an enjoyable conversation with them. And one guy I got talking to, and one thing led to another, and he was a street preacher, and I mentioned Gene Zimmerman, and he knew him, and I'm thinking, whoa, what this guy does, he and his wife travel often wherever Hillary shows up, all through Iowa. They just pestered her, and they have a great big banner, Hillary's Holocaust, and it was all about abortion. They'd have the abortion pictures of the fetuses, and people would get so mad at them. They'd get mad at them at showing them the procedure. What about getting mad at the doctors performing the procedure? And he's done that all over, and I guess she's around Indiana now. But this is a murdering the innocent, abortion and so forth, okay? 8, verse 9. 9, notice the poor is mentioned quite through there. Verse 8, against the poor. Verse 9, catch the poor. Okay, verse 9, catch the poor twice. Okay, and the idea is that the way he's going to catch the poor is through court procedures. Because people get involved in court, they don't want to mess with it, they don't have the time, they're going to lose work. And so people just say, just forget it, I'll pay the fine and then go on from there. Okay, and this is how they do it. Okay, and just as the ACLU for years has scared people just from the threat of litigation, okay, good people can do the same thing. It's just the problem is that when you get in court, they're going to beat you up as much as they can, and a lot of people just say, okay, I've had it, I'm enough of that. Okay, and so this is what he's dealing with. Okay, verse 10, he croucheth and humbleth himself. That's the common saying, that you stoop to conquer, that the poor may fall by his strong ones. His strong ones, a good cross-reference for that would probably be going running with the workers of iniquity. And they'll be doing that through the court systems. Verse 11, he hath said in his heart, God hath forgotten. He hideth his face, he will never see it. Okay, who's he in verse 11? Okay, all this time in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, the he and the subject is the Antichrist or the devil. So is verse 11, he, the devil, hath said in his heart, God hath forgotten, he hideth his face, he will never see it? Or is this the person who's praying? Okay, this is a person praying about this, verse 1. Why standest thou afar off, O Lord? Why hidest thou thyself in times of trouble? Okay, so verse 11, you know, I would probably lean towards the person praying. But, You know, and just have to ask the Lord on that one, see if he gives you some insight. The idea about him hiding his face, that was prophesied many, many times in Deuteronomy. Okay, Deuteronomy, remember the fifth book in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy, the duet, the second giving of the law in the Old Testament. And the fifth book in the New Testament is a second opportunity for the Jews to receive their Messiah. But in Deuteronomy, I think it's 31:19, he forewarned the Jews back in there that if they did not obey him, then he was going to hide his face from them. And that's Deuteronomy 31:17. And I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 cross-references back there, and there's many others, okay, about God hiding his face. And doctrinally, that's when the Jews are in a tribulation and they're asking the Lord to help intervene for them, and the Lord says nothing. The heavens are like brass. He doesn't answer them. Why? Because they have mocked him for years. And so he doesn't answer them. He hides from them. Okay, and obviously it's for a short time, 3.5 years, but the Lord does that to you and I also. There's times when the Lord will be right there and you feel like he's just right with you and you can feel his presence and you can know that he's leading. And those are times, you know, when, you know, I just, Lord, stick around. I really like that when you're doing that. But then he'll withdraw himself and just let you go on, and you got to go on by faith. Okay, and the Lord does that, where he comes in close, he withdraws, comes in close, withdraws. And what those things, what he's doing is he's testing our sincerity. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 8, he mentioned that to the Jews about, you're going to wander through this wilderness. Okay, and the idea is he is humbling them, and he is getting them to realize that they need to have trust in the Lord. Now, trust in the Lord is when he's not giving any visible or emotional stability there for you, or evidence, where you just got to believe what he said. Okay, and so verse 11, is this the person thinking that God is hiding and God hasn't seen it, or is this the Antichrist in it? I think you could run both ways on that. But verse 12, this is obviously the person requesting, "Arise, O Lord, O God, lift up thine hand, forget not the humble." Okay, and that arise is used often throughout Psalms. Okay, now we obviously know that when he asked the Lord to arise, what is that? That sounds goofy because he's in heaven. You would seem to think you would ask him to come down. But the idea of arising is because Jesus is referred to as the Son, S-U-N, of righteousness. So it's like a sunrise. It's still it's an asking. It's a request for the second coming of Christ, which is what we need to do. Pray for the second coming of Christ. Okay, and that's 12:13. "Wherefore doth the wicked contemn God?" That means to look down on. Look down on God. "He hath said in his heart, thou wilt not require it." Okay, looking down snottily, you know, down people's, you know, all this stuff. Felipe is just telling me that they went up to Crown Point, I think it was last night, because they're evidently filming something up there in Crown Point, something about John Dillinger, and I guess there's a big crowd. And so he went up there, and I think Josh was with him, Josh Evanoff, and they went street preaching. And he said, people just mock us and go, goo, 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 goo. And he said, who's the nuts? These people, 500, 600, 800 people are sitting there gawking at somebody that they can't see, some actor. And they don't even get close enough to see them. And we're telling them about Jesus Christ, and they think we're the nuts. You know, and isn't that true? Okay? They're the nuts because they're one heartbeat from hell. And we're one heartbeat from heaven. Who's nuts? And it's like During Paul's trials in the book of Acts, you know, one guy said, "Paul, much learning doth make thee mad." And he said, "Well, I'm not mad. You know, I'm not the crazy one. You're the crazy one." And that's so true. And they said that about Jesus also. His friends said he's beside himself. You see, society wants you to be a middle of the roader for everything. Be moderate about, you know, you always hear extremist. These right-wing extremists. God is an extremist. It's either heaven or hell. It's right or wrong. It's good or it's evil. And you see, people always want to water things down and feel comfortable about themselves. And it's funny, I was talking to a fella who was trying to get enough guys to play softball, get in a softball league down at Rensselaer, and I don't know if we're going to get enough, but you know, if you have an interest, fine, but it's driving clear down to Rensselaer. And so he mentioned that there's a church in the area that has enough guys possibly for two teams or a team and a half. And I said, "Well, maybe I can call them, maybe we can combine one." And then I said, "Nah, I don't think they would want to play on a team that, you know, our church name would be involved." And he says, "Well, there's one God and one Bible. What's the big problem?" I said, "Well, there's not one Bible, and that Bible says there's not just one God." And he just says, "Well, that tells you how little I know." He said, "Don't you think they could put that aside for softball?" And I said, "I know I could, but I don't know if they could." But the idea is that, you know, these people, these Christians today, they just want you to take things out of the Bible that benefits them. If it doesn't benefit them, don't tell me about it. You see, and that's a common error. Back in Genesis 40, you know, remember the two guys were in jail and Joseph is going to interpret their dreams. And it says the second one, after he saw that the interpretation was good, then he asked Joseph to interpret his dream. What if he would have done the evil one first? You think the other guy would have said, "Forget it. Don't even tell me about mine." Okay, and that's, we got to take the good and the bad of the Bible. My cousin called me this morning. He's got a church started. The last Sunday was his first Sunday down in Kentuck. And he told me he's talking to somebody, and this guy says that all good comes from God and all evil comes from the devil. And he said, "I didn't think that was true." And I said, "You're right. Truth is often stranger than fiction." I said, Isaiah 45, verse 7, "I, the Lord, create evil." You know, that was something. I mentioned that one time in a church in Rensselaer, you know, that the devil has to go to God to get his orders, and God limits him. And that upset a gentleman in the church, and I didn't see him for 3, 4, 5 months after that. I figured he just, you know, got his clutch plate burned about something. And he's the type of guy that shows up and then leaves and shows up, you know, and all that stuff. And so then 5 months came by or so, or 6 months, I don't remember exact time frame, and he talked to me and he said, "I need to apologize to you." And I said, "What for?" He said, "Boy, was I mad at you when I left." And I said, "Oh, I didn't know that." He said, "Yeah, and here's the statement you made." And I said, "Well, okay." And he said, "Then I was reading my devotions, Isaiah 45, 7, I, the Lord, you know, create light and create evil." And he said, "Right there it is." I said, "Yeah, it is, isn't it?" You know, the Bible is quite a book. And often people get upset because they don't understand something. But what they need to do is go to the one that they don't understand and ask them. And then go to the book and ask for verification. Okay, if all of us would just take off about something we disagree with, none of us would stick around, including myself. Okay? And so the Bible is an unlimited book. The Lord is a God of infinite wisdom, it says in Psalms. Okay, so in verse 13, he's looking down on God. Okay, and of course, this is what the world will do to you and I, and this is what carnal Christians will do to you and I. Bible believers, they look down on us. That's okay. Okay, verse 13, he hath said in his heart, thou wilt not require it, thou hast seen it, for thou beholdeth mischief and spite to requite it with thy hand. The poor committeth himself unto thee, thou art the helper of the fatherless. Now you would tend to think, man, picking on little orphans, even heathen on the street, you know, don't appreciate that. I mean, I don't care how wicked a man is in jail, they almost always beat up pedophiles. Why? Because they picked on something innocent. Taking advantage of someone who's innocent, a child. And here he's talking about somebody taking advantage of the fatherless, an orphan. But yet, these same people that will take advantage of these orphans are ones that will publicly say, oh, the children. We're concerned for the children. You know, Janet Rebo or Reno. She was so concerned for the children that David Koresh, you know, had hurt. And turned around and gassed 18 of them before they came in and just burned them all down. I mean, ordered it. Knew exactly what they were doing. Knew what the gassing was going to do to the children. Found the scarred bodies of the children from what the gas did to them, the chemicals. You know, oh, we're concerned for the children. If you haven't seen any of the evidence of that, you know, get this video called The Rules of Engagement. It's a documentary, and it was shown in many theaters across this country. But you get that and watch that, and you can just see. And of course, now all this stuff is way back in the memory of people. People have forgotten about David Koresh. Granted, yeah, he was a Bible nutcase. Yeah, he was a Seventh-day Adventist, you know, wishy-washy on some of his stuff. But that's the freedoms we have in our country. You're allowed to be wishy-washy doctrinally. Okay, even God allows that. He said, what's the chaff to the wheat? Okay, and so, you know, you watch that documentary and get some more of the evidence involved with that. Okay, and so it's something to do, but remember James 1:27, what pure religion is. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction, to keep himself unspotted from the world. Okay, so this gives us our time setting with James. James mentions poor and needy, poor and needy. James mentions the fatherless, the widows. Okay, Psalms 10 mentions the poor, mentions the fatherless. It is the same doctrinal time period. Okay, verse 15, break thou the arm of the wicked and the evil man, seek out his wickedness till thou find none. And this is an unusual thing, but it's a common thing throughout the Bible. Break the arm. Could that be the army? Okay, which it could be. Or could it be breaking the arm of the Antichrist, which that is a doctrinal something, doctrinally that's important to get. Okay, where you have the Antichrist is going to have a bad right arm. Going to have something bad about it. Hitler did. He had a bad arm. He had an arm that would twitch or something. Okay, and so that way you'd call him a southpaw. Paw as in cat. Okay, and or he's going to have a bad right eye. According to Zechariah 11, that is apparent what it could possibly do, where he gets shot in the head, you know, blows his eye out or affects his right arm. A bad right eye means he'd be looking out through his left eye, and left eye, that is sinister ocular. Okay, evil eye. That means an evil eye. The medical term is sinister ocular. Okay, and so any of us parents knows that when you squint the one eye and look through your kids, so often you squint in the right eye. I don't know which eye Popeye would squint. Was it the right eye or the left eye? But I don't know how, you know, doctrinal Popeye was. But he's weird. He's got weird arms, didn't he? And if Popeye or Pope Yes or Pope Ye, depends how you look at it, always going after olive oil, the Holy Ghost, and the one that goes against Popeye is the Brutus. So if you attack the Catholic Church, you're a bigot and a brute. You know, you say, is that part of it? I don't know, but it's kind of interesting anyway. Okay. But even at that, you have the bad arm. Okay, and that's something, a bad arm, bad eye, and you look at some of the men in the Bible that got hit in the head. Okay, Sisera, Abimelech, Goliath, Judas Iscariot. So they're all types of Antichrist. Okay, now 16. The Lord is King forever. Okay, the time period of that, doctrinal time period, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. What follows the tribulation? What follows after he breaks the arm and breaks the head of the Antichrist, verse 15, what follows is second coming. The Lord is King forever and ever. The heathen are perished out of his hand. The Lord, thou hast heard the desire of the humble. Thou wilt prepare their heart. Thou wilt cause thine ear to hear, to judge the fatherless and the oppressed, that the man of the earth may no more oppress. Now, there's honest to goodness oppression. You know, Obama and company, you're worried about the oppressed minority. You know, cut it out. I mean, if you're dealing with an oppressed minority, deal with Bible believers. Okay, but we're not going to pick that up and have a persecution complex. That just goes with the territory. Deal with the Jewish people. As far as being oppressed, the Jewish folks, but then you've got the Jewish folks at the top who are oppressing the Jewish folks at the bottom. The apostate Jews versus the believing remnant. Okay, but you talk about oppression. Okay, and the Antichrist, of course, is going to make everybody look like a Sunday school picnic. Okay, that's 10. Okay, 11. 11 seems to follow the same doctrinal flow. In the Lord put I my trust. How say ye to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain. Your, while you are mountain. So this person is commenting to somebody else. The somebody else is in verse 2, the wicked. So this is the wicked or jailer or the ones who fulfill the bidding of the Antichrist, mocking, making fun of the captures, the prisoners of war, or the ones that are going to be captured. So they're telling them, why don't you run where you're supposed to? Maybe, and this person says, what do you mean run? I'm trusting the Lord. If the Lord tells me to run, I'll run. If the Lord tells me to stay, I'll stay. But I'm trusting in God. Come hell or high water, I'm going to trust in Him. Psalms 27 seems to have the same attitude or the same idea. Psalms 27, verse 1, the Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the strength of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked, even mine enemies and my foes, came upon me to eat up my flesh, they stumbled and fell. Though an host should encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war should rise against me, in this will I be confident. Now there's a person that has absolute trust in God. Now how does a person get to that? Faith is something that grows. If you have faith, as a faith, you know, a grain of a mustard seed. So this is obviously somebody who's mature in the faith. God has probably taken them through many things, and they say, hey, I just know God's going to, all things work together for good to them that love God. Okay, and so in Psalm 11, verse 1, flee as a bird to your mountain. Okay, the doctrinal footing of that is Matthew 24. Run to the mountain. Matthew 24. Okay, Matthew 24, verse 3, you can see the questions that are asked the Lord. So his answer will go according to those questions, obviously. So the questions are dealing with the thy coming and the end. Okay, so that's the questions. The answer starts in verse 4, 5, 6, 7, down through there. Okay, in verse 15, he says, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place. Whoso readeth, let him understand. Okay, then you run back to Daniel. You hold your finger there and run back to Daniel and read Daniel 8 and Daniel 9 and Daniel 7 and Daniel 11 and read those places and you discover what the abomination of desolation is. Okay, and that's when the Antichrist walks into the Jewish temple that's been rebuilt, and he offers a sacrifice, and he tells the Jews to worship me, and then they won't do it, and then he offers the Jews as a sacrifice. And when you see that, and that's on the television, you know, on the satellite TV, he says in verse 16, then let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house, neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. Woe unto them that are with child and to them that give suck in those days. It's interesting that how he writes that. They're with child, pregnant, and give suck. Now, that, if you think about that verse, is that a verse that would give us some evidence that children before age of accountability are raptured out? Okay, why are they raptured out? Well, you know, if the children are raptured, then ladies get pregnant after the rapture, they have sucklings and are with child. So does that mean there's not, you know, at this time there'll be no kids, you know, from, say, at the rapture, all kids from one day old to whatever age of accountability is for that, you know, individual, six, all them kids are gone. Wouldn't that be something on people's thinking? But then after the rapture, okay, then you've got the sucklings. Kids being born after the rapture, you've got women with children. Okay, and now, is that saying that, or is that just saying, obviously, these are the ones that are going to have a hard time? Well, it's obvious for there. Then verse 20 says, but pray ye that your flight be not in winter, neither on a Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Okay, and so that's Matthew 24, and that would seem to be with Psalms 11. In the Lord put I my trust, how say ye to my soul, flee as a bird to your mountain? For lo, the wicked bend their bow, they make ready their arrow upon the string, that they may privily shoot at the upright in heart. Okay, again, privily, secret society, conspiracies. Okay, bend their bow. The bow is over there in Revelation 6, the mystery bowman on the white horse, the counterfeit Christ. Okay, and so there they are, making ready their arrow upon the string, that they may shoot, that they may privily, okay, privily behind closed doors, the courtrooms are closed, you know, legislature's closed, you can't be in session, blah, 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 blah. And according to Psalm 94:20, they frame mischief by a law. And then he asked this question, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? Well, verse 1, run. That's about all they can do. Run and trust God. Okay, the foundations of society, the foundations of earth itself. Okay, what can they do? Well, and notice it does say the word righteous. Remember, that is an Old Testament term for people who are righteous or bound to the Abraham's bosom. In the New Testament, we would say saved. In verse 4, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His eyes behold, his eyelids try the children of men. So he's testing us. He's trying us, putting us through trials and tribulations to test our heart, to see where we're at. Okay, the Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord trieth the righteous, but the wicked and him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. Oh, so there's a verse for us that shows that there are occasions that God hates individuals. Okay, now, the wicked, is that flesh and blood? Probably. Or spirit beings. But the wicked, him that loveth violence, his soul hateth. Okay, and then a cross-reference on that. I have one at two there. You could throw in another one if you want to write in the margin, Malachi 1, verse 3 and 4, or verse 2, 3 and 4. I think it's one verse 2 in particular, where he says that Jacob have I loved and Esau have I hated. And then a New Testament parallel for that is Romans 9, verse 13. So there are occasions where the Lord does hate the person. And there's two other cross-references, okay? And the ones that love violence. Now, isn't that basically what is, you know, Americans are going for? I mean, just violence, killing and beating up people and everything. Verse 6, upon the wicked he shall rain snares, fire and brimstone, and an horrible tempest. This shall be the portion of their cup. Okay, that cup, that's reference to the cup of God's wrath. Psalm 75, verse 7 and 8 would be a good cross-reference. Over there in Genesis 15, the Lord says about the Amorites, their iniquity is not yet full. So it's like the Lord has a cup or a bowl or a vial that man's sins or nation's sins are poured into this, and then when the cup gets full, the vial kind of pours over some judgments, and then God picks up the cup and pours the judgments out on the nation. In the New Testament, Revelation 15, verse 7 and 8, he talks about seven vials, and it says there that these are full of the wrath of God. And so he has the seven vials where he picks them up and pours them out. And it's about like, you know, you ever see where you got your glass and you fill it up very slowly with water and then you fill it to the tippy top and you could actually see where the water is above the brim. And then you drop some more and then when you drop a few more and then all of a sudden it just pours over to the side. And often I believe that's kind of like the Lord throwing out a hurricane or a tornado or an earthquake. These are signs that God is going to come down harder on the nation. Okay, and so these are ways that God warns the people. But when the cup of God's wrath comes down hard, that's when it's, you know, it's fully coming down. Of course, hell is the complete fullness of God's wrath. It is not the absence of God, it's the fullness of God's wrath. Okay, and then the last verse. For the righteous Lord loveth righteousness. His countenance doth behold the upright. So he hates violence, and he hates wickedness, verse 5. He loves righteousness. And Hebrews 1, verse 8 and 9, verse 9, it mentions God the Father speaking to God the Son, and he said that thou hast loved righteousness and hated iniquity. Therefore, thy God has anointed thee above thy fellows with the oil of gladness. Okay, and so that's where we should be. Okay, then Psalms 12 next. Okay, any questions on what we covered so far?